So welcome, episode 101, Podcast Pills Road. My name is Russell, and it's good evening to Leon in Innsbruck. How are you, sir?
I'm all right, Russ. How are you?
Yeah, I'm okay. You dropped out the last one with all of us. Quite late on, you were poorly bad, weren't you?
Yeah, a little bit. Mainly just being knackered from parenting. I fell asleep whilst sort of reading to my 8-year-old son. It's an occupational hazard. I'm sure you guys have been there.
But we take our bubble protocols very seriously, so we didn't call anybody up as a late replacement. So Gaz and I just we flew solo. You okay, Gaz?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Yeah, so episode 101. So that would have been episode 99. Episode 100, the honour fell to Chris Leake from the Barry Horns, and he was reminiscing. And I thought it would be a nice, we talked about doing it for ages, and when obviously the England friendly got announced, I thought, oh, that's a nice way to look ahead to the England game, having something a bit English, England themed. So Chris came along and reminisced about his first Wales game 50 years ago, coming up from Swansea, not telling his mum or his dad that he was coming up, getting off at Cardiff Central and making his way over to Indian Park to watch us draw 1-1 with a really, really strong England team that was about to go off to Mexico 1970. And then a week later, he caught his beloved Vetch, caught us against his beloved Vetch, sorry, against Northern Ireland. And he got to see George Best. So quite an important week for a young formative Chris. I think he's 13, but 50 years ago, just getting a glimpse of what football was like back in the olden days. I quite like the fact his sister in the Northern Ireland game went along. He thinks to this day her only football game just because so she could go and see George Best. And you get the impression he'd probably put a few thousand on the gate.
Yeah.
Made his debut at the Vetch, of course, yeah. So yes, that was episode 100. This is episode 101, looking back at the triple header, England, Ireland and Bulgaria. Bit of a mixed bag, and I hate to say it, but I called it again, win one, lose one, drew one. And I thought the loss would come against England, and it did. What do you call it, Guy? Can you remember?
I think similar. I think we found it very sort of difficult to call. I don't think any of us talked about it with any kind of conviction, just because it was really hard to judge what sort of personnel we'd enter into each game was, as proved to be the case. You know, there was a lot of chopping and changing and further pullouts being unavailable and then suspense after the Ireland game. So I won't take any shame in not calling it 100% this time.
I mean, notwithstanding, we did okay in the first half, I thought, on the whole. About midway through the second half, as they've gone sort of 3-0 up, I then had this kind of memory, this glimpse of back into the past, and I just remembered this was why Chris Coleman never played friendlies. Yeah. Yeah. So I was watching it and then praying that nobody gets injured, given that the two more important games that were coming up. How did you see the England game, Leon?
Well, I watched with my English mate Dave, so he came to Bordeaux with me to watch the Slovakia game 4 years ago. So he's not one of the sort of gloating, annoying English fans. He just loves football and he wanted to see a good game. I think he was sort of, I got the impression he was sort of disappointed that the likes of Bale and Ramsey weren't playing for us, because you know it would have been more of a test for England, obviously, and then. I just felt like once Kiefer Moore went off with that injury, we just had no sort of presence up front, really, did we? It was just sort of damage limitation then, because there was no, well, the players that give you presence up front, Moore, Bale, Robson, Kanu, none of them were available after Moore went off, obviously. So we just looked a bit toothless then, and it was just about, you know, how many goals can we keep them down to? Yeah. Johnny Williams played well, and that was a sort of a bit of a sign of things to come. For someone who's playing at the third tier, he's playing for Charlton, some of his touches and some of his little dribbles are just such a joy to watch. And I watched it with German commentary, but the commentator at some point early in the second half made a point of saying, I really like this player, I'm really surprised he's playing at such a low level. So that's quite interesting to see the view from abroad on someone like Johnny Williams. It's just, yeah, I'm sure we'll talk a bit more about him later.
That first 20 minutes, you're right what you say about Kiefer Moore. We looked okay. Jonny Williams and Tyler Roberts to an extent as well were quite neat and tidy on the ball, and they looked like they, you know, we had a bit of possession and they looked like they might do something. We did have that presence up front. When we lost Kiefer Moore and we had to go to Tyler Roberts, you know, moving into that more striker position, we didn't affect them at all in that final third. We looked really, really short of ideas. They were kind of everything we've talked about what we're missing. You know, for them, they were putting out effectively a B team, weren't they? But if they can call on someone like Jack Grealish, who isn't normally anywhere near their team, and he can just run things and he can sort of pick a pass and he can, you know, find that space in the final third, even though, you know, Jonny Williams and Tyler Roberts looked lively for a little bit in the first 20, 25 minutes, they couldn't really, I don't know, affect anything that created any real chances for us. And after that, we, you know, we barely laid a glove on them.
I mean, it fizzled out as a game. I mean, like, you know, the bench gets emptied for both teams, but the gap in class of the benches that were available, you know, really told then towards the end. I mean, I think once they went 3-0 up as well, I mean, they sort of coasted a little bit because obviously they had a couple of important games coming up as well. So, yeah, I mean, it would have been one of those. I'm sure it would have been a useful exercise if it was some sort of, you know, behind closed doors, which it was obviously, but I mean, in the old fashioned sense of the term, exhibition or you know, arranged training game of 60 minutes, you know, leave it at that. Given that I'd raced home, if you remember, Gav, nearly if I was side to get the kick off.
Yeah.
It wasn't really worth doing, to be honest.
No.
As I seem to remember on the WhatsApp, you predicted, but yeah, more for me.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we're going to sort of take anything away from it. It was a little bit worrying how easily they scored the goals that they scored. I mean, you know, Meppen back in the team. I think it was his first game for, well, best part of a year for us. And, you know, he lost Calvert-Lewin badly for the first goal and he had a bit of a shaky time all night. And then those two goals from set pieces in the second half, you'd think, well, even if we're not going to affect them in that final third, you know, you'd think maybe with what was effectively our, you know, our first choice back four and Ampadu and Morel, who've done well in midfield as well, you'd think we'd have had a bit more maybe strength and structure and organisation at the back. But I don't know, it just seemed really, really easy for them to score goals against us. But for Wayne Hennessy, in our last 20, 25 minutes, it could have been 5 or 6, if we're honest.
Yeah, no, you're right. But Meppen looked all over the shop, I thought. And then when Cabango came on, I thought, well, you know, I mean, I can understand why Cabango gets a half when he needs the experience. Keep rolling for the more important games. But I remember thinking, well, you know, Meppen's got to coach this youngster through this game. Yeah, didn't seem to be entirely in control of his own game.
But I mean, he is young. I mean, that's the thing with Meppen as well. Yeah, he's only 22, yeah. I think. You know, so handful of international caps. So it's, you know, it's a big ask. And young players do tend to have these games where they do make mistakes, you know, and then it's only the really, like, truly exceptional ones who don't. I mean, I even, you know, remember Bale dawdling on the ball against Germany as a teenager. You know, these things happen.
Yeah.
And you know, you just put that down to a bad game. He's a good player, Chris Meppen. He had a bit of a mare, but you know, he puts that behind him and he learns from it and comes back stronger.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. As long as they've got a bit of resilience, it's quite important actually for the kind of players we're calling on to have that experience and to sort of learn from it. Although you could equally look at the England team and talk about their lack of international experience. Those are top quality English Premier League players. We aren't able to sort of draw on that sort of poor resources. By the time we get not too far into the second half, we've got Levitt on for Joe Morel, we've got Folks on for Ampadu, you know, we've got Matt Smith on towards the end, Nico Williams. These are players who are young and raw and playing in many cases at lower levels, and they will make mistakes, and it's a good test for them once in a while to come up against a really good quality opposition. And I thought when Meppen was then back in the team against Bulgaria, I thought he did all right, you know, albeit against a much weaker team.
You know, talk about the midfielders, I thought across the three games all of the central midfielders had a decent run out. I mean, notwithstanding Ampadu returned to midfield, obviously for the England game, still rotating, looking at combinations with all of those central midfielders. Morel and Ampadu start against England. He brings on Levitt, brings on Vokes. Sorry, Jonny Williams starts as well. Smith comes on for him. They then get starts each and so on. It's I'm not quite sure he's made up his mind yet what his best midfield combination is to go with. Obviously, to go with Ramsey. I thought Morel was the pick of them for me against England. I thought when Levitt came on, I think he was just chasing shadows. And actually, I thought it was one of those ones where I thought it's a sort of it's quite a chastening experience for him. But yeah, like you said, young, playing at a low level. He's only just recently made his league debut as well, you know, for what it's worth. So, you know, he's going to have them. But it's one of those ones where I began to feel a bit sorry for him. And it, maybe it's an unfair comparison to directly compare it with Morel's sort of first half. But across the three games, he's still looking at them all, I think.
Yeah, I think so. It's worth noting that Morel's that bit older, and we've already seen him emerge as just already he's got that bit more quality than Levitt and Smith. But we, myself included, have maybe given Matt Smith a bit of a tough time in recent podcasts, the way he struggled to, you know, pin down a place at club level last year or so. But actually, you know, I needed a bit of a reminder watching that game that, you know, Matt Smith isn't 21 until next month. Levitt isn't even 20 until next month. These are players who have actually now, in the last few games, have played quite a lot of football at a stage where we wouldn't really expect them to, just because of Joe Allen's injury, of what we've got a Lackens in that area. So they're only going to benefit from that. And all of them now have got clubs where it looks like, you know, even if it's at third tier level, they're going to play a bit of football. You know, so there's no reason to think those players won't progress and be the better four, maybe in shadows for a game or two.
I read somebody wrote something like, you know, what exactly was the point of playing this game with you know, in a stadium with no fans to prove that England's B team is better than our B team? Yeah, we kind of knew that already, something like that. And it's kind of, that's just how I felt about it. It seemed a slightly pointless exercise, and it kind of lost us this kind of run of not losing. So we've had to kind of swap over to saying this is it, this run of not losing in competitive games as it is now, which is cool because it's fine because those are the games that matter.
I mean, I'm not sure I completely agree. I think that, you know, an unbeaten run is only as good as the opposition you've played. And, you know, we could, if we only play weak teams the whole time, we could go on a 20-game unbeaten run. But every so often, you've got to test yourself against better opposition. You know, in recent memory, we've had beatings off Spain and off France. And, OK, albeit if this is an England B team, yeah, it's still way better than the teams we've been playing. I think, you know, it was a decent test for us. I think we need those every so often. It does lay a little bit bare the work we've still got to do.
It doesn't really bother me losing this unbeaten run. But I mean, just on that, what I would say is that we are, the setup of the Nations League is that you are playing teams who are around your level. It's not like we're playing games against Liechtenstein and San Marino or whatever, or you know, Luxembourg, as we always seem to, remember Toshak. It's like, you know, we are in the B League of the Nations League because that's, you know, we were finished second in the three team group last time round, so we're in there with the likes of Ireland and Bulgaria and Finland because that is our level at the moment, and hopefully we can prove that we deserve to be promoted because I think we are the best team in this group. But I wouldn't sort of dismiss this run of competitive games saying we're just playing weak opposition, because, you know, these are teams with a bit of football pedigree.
Yeah, no, I don't mean to dismiss it completely. What I'm thinking of, though, is having maybe half an eye on the future, the Euros themselves, you know, the possibility that we might move on to the next level in the Nations League. It's not that we've played exclusively weaker teams, but actually, even in the Nations League, Ireland, Bulgaria, Finland, are these good teams when you consider that we've got to go to the Euros next summer and we've got to play teams who are significantly better than that? But all I'm thinking is it does us no harm, actually, you know, notwithstanding a 3-0 defeat, to every so often go and play in England or a Spain or a France. And even if we get beaten, I think that at least it gives us an experience that might, you know, might stand us in good stead if we do find it a bit tougher against Italy, say, next summer. So I don't know. I thought it was kind of a worthwhile exercise.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. I mean, at least these teams are playing us now, you know, like in friendlies, yeah. Spain, France, England in recent times. We hadn't played these teams in friendlies for years and years before. Shows that we're kind of on their radar now.
And actually, we'd be playing some better teams in the Nations League if it hadn't been stitched up to make sure none of the top teams got relegated after the last one either. So, you know, there is that to bear in mind. I saw a stat that's now six straight wins for England over us, which, if you want to throwing a really pointless stat, goes all the way back to the last British Home Championship in 1984, but that ignores the fact we didn't play them for 20 years after that.
And while he's digging out those bigger nations, Gaz, probably rightly, I'm under no illusions that England are probably only playing this given that there's a global pandemic on, travel, bubbles, all the rest of that. And it was a fairly straightforward fixture. I noticed they've got one against Ireland now next month themselves. Again, I think it's a similar motivation on England's part with respect to that fixture as well. I mean, they have played Ireland a few more times, admittedly, than us in that period. But I do wonder whether, jumping forward maybe 5, 6, 7 years, whether we become a sort of like a Nations League yo-yo team, too good for Tier B, but based on the last showings against the big nations, we've not really laid a glove on them. And whether we'll just come straight back down every year. But
there is a reality that we can only really go toe to toe with those top nations with our best players available. You know, we were in Euro 2016, we had our best players available, and although it wasn't strictly speaking a B team for us, because if you look at the 11 that started, you'd say 7 of them are probably in our first team, but it was the players who were missing were the players who would really affect us or affect teams in an attacking sense. Without Bale, Ramsey, Brooks and Allen, and even without a couple of those, you'd hopefully then look to Wilson and James, but they weren't available. So, you know, it's a big ask to go and play any of these teams without that kind of talent. And, you know, I'm sure those players who went through it will learn from it nonetheless.
I suppose it's similar to the point I think you made at the start, Leon, with respect to your English mate watching the game. I suppose he'd know a little bit more about this. You know, the England second string had the likes of Bale and Ramsey been playing to test them a little bit more and put a bit under a bit more pressure, perhaps. So he's probably not learned a huge amount necessarily about that second string based on the game either. So,
yeah, I think he was sort of just encouraged by Jack Grealish's performance. I'm surprised that Southgate didn't really use him again for the kind of game. It seems a bit of a strange one considering how impressive he was. But those are England's issues.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, he was excellent, to be fair, to Grealish. The most I've watched him, I suppose, in any 90-minute period. And no, he was impressive. A quick shout-out to Wayne Hennessy, who equalled, and he probably would have wanted a better evening to do it, but Big Nev's caps total in that game. Obviously went on to beat it in the others. Those three goals, the only goals he seeded, way back to that Croatia draw in Cardiff.
I mean, on Wayne Hennessy, I would say he was our man of the match in that game. Those the save from Saka and then one from Ings in the last 10 minutes were absolutely outstanding saves. It was a decent one at the end, right at the end, from Ward-Prowse as well. There was a lot, you know, I know I'm a bit of a stuck record sort of sticking up for Wayne Hennessy, but, you know, again, with the three games coming up, there was a lot on social media about we need a sort of transition plan for our goalkeeper. But I don't know, goalkeepers in particular, I feel like at international level, you pick your best keeper unless you've got any reason not to, and unless he's really doing something to kind of get himself out of the team. And time after time, notwithstanding the fact he's not playing much club football, there's not many games go by where he doesn't make two or three crucial saves. And okay, this time it was only the difference between 3-0 and 5-0, but I thought he was excellent again. And he's far, far, I think, above the next best option we've got at the moment, and worth remembering that.
And I'll invite you to consider that next best option in a bit. The Bulgaria game. Okay, so Ireland. Ramsey comes back. Obviously, he was unavailable because of the positive tests, I think, in the Juventus camp. I was surprised he made it at all, frankly, then, after that. But he did. Obviously, James comes back into the side. Harry Wilson comes back into the side. Makes a couple of changes. Smith comes in. Ampadu drops back into central defence. But that's about as much as I want to say about the game. It was appalling. We're sick of playing them, they're sick of playing us. Find something positive for me to say about it. We kept a clean sheet, okay, there's one.
clean sheet. Defensively, we look fairly solid. I mean, Shane Long probably should have scored that header, shouldn't he? I don't remember too many times they sort of cut us open. Okay, Ireland are not a particularly dynamic side at the moment, but... you know, a clean sheet in a competitive game is not to be sniffed at, I suppose. But yeah, there's not a lot to say about that.
With the youth in our sort of defence and midfield, I guess you can't really argue with keeping them down. Two half decent chances. The long one was a really good chance, and then I think Horgan sort of skied a rebound from his own header 20 minutes later or so, and that was a decent chance as well. But other than that, they didn't really test us. And I think that's a decent, solid defensive performance. But again, it's worth remembering that it's not a good team. They'd had a load of players pull out, needing to quarantine just just a day or so before. And yet again, you think, okay, well, Wilson, Ramsey, James, they're all coming back in. We can at least maybe now hope that something is going to happen for us in the final third. And we didn't create anything. When Wilson half decent shot that forced to Dave in, after what, 25 minutes, that was the only shot of any note we had for the entire game. And I don't know, it's becoming quite a worry how now how game after game, as particularly when we get back to the sort of, as we described earlier, the level we're at, how few decent chances we're creating, even when some of our better players are available. We scored 10 goals the entire qualification campaign, and I don't get the feeling at the moment we're making progress in that area.
No, I agree. There's only 10 goals in that squad that went up for the Bulgaria game. Okay, there's almost 50 missing when you take Ramsey and Bale out, so it's a fairly artificial statistic in some ways. But the top scorer going out to that was was Wilson with three. It's yeah. There was a lack of fluidity, and I don't know. I mean, you look at some of the mental results that are taking, that are occurring all across the continent at the minute, and you flagged it up, didn't you, Leon, on Twitter? Luxembourg winning in the Balkans now have a better record there than us in terms of wins and things like that. I think the whole disruption to the footballing calendar this year is proving to be a leveler of sorts. I mean, you can't say it's proving a leveler when you look at that Ajax result, for example. But there's some freak results taking place, all over the place. So I'm prepared to cut them some slack so far and hope, I guess, that it's still some rustiness, it's that lack of fluidity, it's playing quite a lot of games as well in a condensed period of time with lack of pre-season, all those sorts of things. And maybe that's we're still trying to iron through some of those creases. But I wouldn't disagree that with your analysis, whatever the reason is, exactly what you said, Gaz, I agree with that.
I suppose the only sort of other, it's not quite a positive, is it? But you could point to the fact that I thought the shout for the challenge on Ampadu by the goalkeeper was a definite penalty. And I think if VAR was existing in international football at the moment, that was clear cut. The idea that was a free kick for the goalkeeper seems bizarre nonsense, if that's what it was. Or was that when the drop ball happened? I can't remember.
No, it was given as a free kick, that even though it was Randolph who just sort of barged into Ampadu, really. Yeah, that was a weird one. I suppose that being quite early on, it might have sort of changed the dynamic a little bit. If we'd scored the penalty, yeah. To be fair, I mean, I suppose things like that can turn games a bit, but we can't look at that performance and say we really sort of deserve to score a goal, even because we just there was a sort of lack of attacking intent, a lack of attacking fluidity. The Wilson shot that you mentioned before, Gaz, that was probably our best move, wasn't it? When he linked up with Ramsey, and that's the only sort of piece of kind of memorable play from us that I can sort of remember in the whole game. It's really I'm sort of struggling to recall what actually happened in that game, even though it was only what, about a week ago.
Not happens. Don't worry about it. It's not your memory, Leon. Don't worry. Literally nothing happened.
No.
No, yeah.
First run up
No.
For the new yellow change kit, which I quite liked. Which apparently this was because the difficulty that a red versus green would have had for people with colorblindness. And so the yellow was picked for that reason. So I think actually it's UEFA ruling that red, or FIFA ruling, one or the other, that red versus green is to be avoided if at all possible. Because one of the things I found with that, watching that game, I found it difficult because there was so much green. There was green seats, which are empty, obviously. There was a few flags that also added a bit more green. There was green on the grass. We're green shorts. I found it quite difficult to watch, actually. Anyway, I digress. There isn't much else to say about it. That penalty shout, what I quite like about it is Randolph quite clearly just this sense of panic as he's dropped the ball. Just, I'm gonna take out anybody and everybody who's in my way just so I can reclaim the ball. How it was not a penalty, I have no idea. And you know this, don't you? The moment that VAR is brought into the international game will be on the end of a rum decision, I'm sure.
Given how poorly they seem to be able to utilize it in any kind of context at the
No.
moment, I'm not going to champion bringing it in, but in that particular incident, I think it would have rectified quite a clear cut error, but there it is.
Yeah, Moore picked up a booking in that game, and meant he didn't go out to Bulgaria.
Morale picked up a booking as well, didn't
That's
he?
Right.
Which I think got him suspended. That's right. The Moore one was possibly a little bit.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
I first watched it, I thought it was a little bit harsh, but then. He does, you know, I suppose he does lead with the arm, and poor old Kevin Long had quite an egg on his head afterwards. So, I don't know. Those sort of things are going to be given at that level, aren't they? Kiefer Moore's a sort of very old-fashioned centre-forward playing a modern game, and I guess he's going to pick up lots and lots of bookings, I guess, and we're just going to have to learn to live with that, I think.
Yeah, and I only caught, about 5-10 minutes of it, but I managed to catch the moment when, in the Cardiff-Middlesbrough game on the weekend, I'm not sure he picked up a booking. I think he possibly did. But Jason Perry was livid. He was doing the summarising on Radio Wales, and he was livid with the way that Moore was getting penalised and then got called up. I'm pretty sure he did get a card, but hopefully stand corrected, for what sounded like pretty much the same thing. And he sort of said, both of them got their arms up, but by virtue of Moore just being taller, obviously his arms are a bit higher up and they're more kind of head height. I do worry a little bit if we're going out to, your Bosnias, your Romanias, your Montenegros, those sorts of fixtures, with refs looking for anything and everything, and some of those opposition being, really trying to buy the fouls, you can see them getting just pinged all game. And I suppose that then is an issue then when it comes back to not just discipline in the cards, but it comes back to that whole trying to establish that rhythm of trying to get your game plan. If you forever just stop, start, having to regroup to defend set pieces and the like, it's possibly a bit of a problem. I don't know.
Yeah, it is, and it's very harsh to have that as a problem, because you can't get away with the sort of clatter into the centre half approach that someone like Alan Shearer would have done not that many years ago. Strikers like Kiefer Moore, who are a little bit rarer now in the modern game, have had to adapt the way they play. They can't just take out a centre back as they feel like. And I watched him play against Bournemouth for City, and it was rubbish. Like two or three times, perfectly good challenges were penalised just because he was strong and he was big. And that's happening in a kind of the cut and thrust of a championship game in England. He's not going to get a sniff from the referee in high pressure showpiece international games.
No, particularly when the away fans are on our backs and creating a bit of an atmosphere, which
they'll shout everything, won't they? And players will go down and they'll hold their heads and they'll
absolutely
all that stuff.
He's got to learn to deal with that. I remember, John Hartson suffered with a similar sort of issue really in his early international days, and he became eventually very effective international player under Mark Hughes, because he learned how to kind of buy fouls for himself. He would sort of arch his back and he would sort of, not necessarily go down, but he would sort of unbalance himself, as it were, in order to create some ambiguity and get a few more decisions going his way. I guess Kiefer Moore's sort of got to sort of go through that process himself, really, if he's going to kind of carry on being such an effective player at international level.
Yeah, no, that's a good shout. That's a good comparison as well. You're right, Hartson did struggle, and in the end, he adapted really, really, really well. Because he was, again, really competitive player and had that edge as well, without compromising that either. Okay, so Bulgaria ending on a high then in terms of these three games. Where do you want to? Yeah, relative high. Then it must date us, mind. We've only been, I haven't done the maths actually, we've been, over the two games, over the 180 minutes, we've been ahead for, about six. I managed to get all 6 points. But if we're now, George Graham's Arsenal at international level, it's grinding out these 1-0 wins, keeping clean sheets, well, I guess you take it.
Yeah, we've only been leading for a total of 5 minutes in the entire group in all fixtures together, and we're top group of dearth, I think I've heard it referred to, but there it is. You can only win what's put in front of you.
Yeah, that was Mirko Bolesin, isn't it, his tweet. I thought it was very good. It deserved a bit more love, I thought, on Twitter, but
Well, shout out to him now then.
The stand up for me was the performance of debutant Reece Norrington-Davies. Yeah. I thought he was excellent. He thundered up and down the left flank. Clearly got a lot of energy, nice touch. But also, talking about that competitive edge that Hartson used to have, there were a couple of times where he seemed to put himself about a bit as well. He didn't seem phased. and I wouldn't call them cheap shots. So there was one where I think he sort of lent into the and bundled them into the hoarding or something. But it was just, there was an assertiveness about it which I really liked. I thought he was excellent.
Yeah, I agree. I like the look of him. We spent a little bit, didn't we, Russ, in the last one about whether there'd be maybe a change of formation to go back to trying out three at the back and wing backs. And when we were talking about that, I was thinking about that more in terms of a way to sort of accommodate giving Cabango a bit more of a go because he's used to playing in a three at Swansea, or to move Ampadu back into the back three. In either of those things, we played Metcalf, Roden and Davis. And I don't think we would have expected Norris to come team, but he looked really natural in that sort of much more attacking sort of wing back role. I think he's been playing perhaps a bit advanced role for Luton last couple of games, and yeah, I thought he looked really good at getting forward, and he got in the box for you know, he already fluffed a bit of a chance. But
I think anyone's going to look good mind if they've got Ben Davies just tucked inside as the left of three, because I thought he was excellent across all three games as well. I mean, I don't disagree with the man of the match award for Hennessy at Wembley, but yeah, no, you're right. We did sort of speculate that, but I mean, Davies is that three. He does give you a little bit more mobility. He gives you that left foot option as well. Clearly, he's quick. I like him as the left of three, but I do wonder whether you compromise then a little bit of your, on paper. Then I would say, do you lose a little bit of your attacking threat? But then, you know, the way Norris and Davies came in, I thought he did. Like I said, I thought he did really, really well. And you know, I didn't feel we missed Davies going forward, although he did get forward on occasions. So yeah, nice options to have.
I think that's going to be an interesting one going forward because Nico Williams has played on the left for our under-19s. I'm pretty sure. He looks like he's sort of comfortable on either side. So if we're going to go with a wing-back system, then we've got, you know, in Connor Roberts and Nico Williams and now Reece Norrington Davies, a few options for people to play on wing. On Ben Davies, he played, interestingly, as one of the two at centre-back for Spurs against LASK the other night in the Europa League. Captain Spurs, in fact, and played alongside Reguilon, who has been brought in for big money to play left back. So I don't know if that's maybe we're going to see a bit more of Ben Davies playing centre back at club level as well. And Mourinho was asked about his performance afterwards and said Ben's such a intelligent player and intelligent man that he can play that role as part of a three or part of a two. He knows what's required. I wonder if Mourinho is thinking about sort of playing him inside a bit more. That's just going to be one to keep an eye on in future. It's interesting.
He mentioned the likes of Giggs, Nick Coleman, and Wales as well in that, wasn't he? He was very literate, wasn't he, about that position.
That was great. Do you know what?
That struck me.
Yeah. Do you know what? What really struck me is it's amazing to actually hear a top manager reference what one of his players has been doing with Wales, because that never used to happen. You'd never hear sort of Ferguson say, Giggs has been playing this role for Wales, so I thought I'd have a look at that or whatever. It just never happened. It was like there was nothing we did seemed to be on the radar of these, you know, top managers at the top clubs, and now we're sort of, it's like we're sitting at the top table. That was great. I thought, wow, Mourinho watches Wales games. Amazing.
It's a nice thing to see happening, isn't it? Like you said, it wouldn't have happened once upon a time. So yeah. I mean, I don't know. Based on that, then, is the possibility that you could have, you know, Davies and Roden playing for Spurs, probably more likely in Europa League games or cup games than I imagine the league, injuries permitting. But that sounds pretty
tasty.
It's
interesting that Spurs went out and got Roden as opposed to sort of a more established centre half. I know they bought a new left back, and that maybe, you know, instinctively could make us worried for Ben Davies' role. But I think kind of Leon's right. Spurs don't have the defensive options they had a few years ago. Alderweireld's quite old now. Vertonghen's gone. A lot of their defensive players, they're a bit uncertain. They're a bit of a liability sometimes. And I think Ben Davies, in a season where Spurs have got another UEFA Cup campaign and they'll have lots of games to play, he may well play a lot of left-back, play a lot of centre-back, but I think he's going to be a safe pair of hands, you know, whenever he's called upon. So, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if we do see him a bit more at centre-half. It would be lovely to see him maybe alongside Roden as well.
I was really frustrated. Again, I don't like digging players out, but I was really frustrated with Matondo in this game. I still think there's this lack of end product and missed a really, really good chance. And I don't know, a bit like Tyler Roberts, it becomes a bit of a stick to keep beating players with. So I have this thing about never seeing Tyler Roberts in the box. Very tidy, very neat. Clearly a really talented, gifted player, got all the skills, but never in the box. And by the same token, Matondo looks bright, he looks eager, he looks enthusiastic, grease lightning quick, and has to take a shot or get a cross in, and then it's just more like our five-a-side end product. Really, really frustrating player, I found.
He and Tyler Roberts, they've got slightly different issues, and Tyler Roberts looks really neat and tidy on the ball, and he's got a little sort of turn away from trouble and a little flick here and there, and he looked lovely and comfortable on the edge of the final third. But actually then, if he's playing more like that sort of on the right as he started the England game, or in like a number 10 role as he does for Leeds, he's done very little for us in terms of then playing in other players. So then if he's playing up front, well, maybe you looked for him to get into the box, get on the end of stuff. He doesn't really do that either. Whereas Matondo sort of, I never think he does look that neat and in control of the ball. He's very much sort of, you know, pacey, move forward quickly. He makes some pretty good runs, actually. He does arrive in the box and he does get there to show a bit of movement and intelligent running in a way that even Wilson and James weren't doing in the earlier parts of the game. But yeah, if it comes to him, you think it's going over the bar, or he's going to shin it somewhere or whatever. And I don't know, he looks very, very raw and very, like he's still got a lot to...
Still, yeah.
Lot to learn around composure and that's that side of the game.
It's interesting because Danny Gabaldon was talking about him last week, and I think he knows him a bit from when he was at Cardiff's academy, Matondo. And Gabaldon was still, you know, saying, yeah, he's still got these kind of little things about his game to learn, and he's a bit surprised and a bit disappointed that he hasn't learned these things now, because he went off to Man City from Cardiff's academy because of it was supposedly going to be a better football education, and then he's gone off to the Bundesliga and had a season under his belt at Schalke. They're in free fall at the moment. I mean, as soon as he gets out of there, the better, because they're probably going down. They're in a terrible state. But it's just not coming. It's just that the progress isn't quite coming. It's got, because, you know, raw talent is there, isn't it? And the pace is there. But it's just the end product, the decision making. Yeah, it's got some work to do still.
If you compare him to someone like Nico Williams, say, who, you know, a club level seems to be being primed to play quite a different position, but Giggs likes him coming in on that attacking right-hand side role. And he, a year younger than Matondo, his decision-making is excellent, the variety in his play is excellent, his delivery is excellent, and players around where he is in the pecking order, I don't know, I think with the arrival of Nico Williams, they're just slipping that little bit further down, because Matondo doesn't look like he's going to be someone who you can ever rely consistently good over even half a game, let alone a full game. You know, I can see an impact threat in the last 15 minutes if you're chasing the game, but not sure about more than that. He reminds me of George Williams, to be honest.
You can see him, even if he gets to 30, 40 caps, half a dozen of them will be ever complete 90 minutes, because he'll either be hauled off early or be sent on as that impact sub. You know, the way it's gone to date, so plenty of time for it to change.
Of course.
I'm inclined to think that, you know, the Bundesliga is a little bit more enlightened than, say, the Championship here. And, you know, I think back to when Harry Wilson went on loan to Crewe, and you just thought Crewe were really struggling at that time in League One, I think it was. And you just thought, that's not the sort of player who should be going to a League One relegation dogfight club. So, like I said, Bundesliga perhaps a little bit more enlightened. But you don't necessarily think that Matondo's the sort of player who's going to get a load of game time if a side like Schalke, and you know, I agree with you, Leon, think they are going to struggle this year. That's not the environment that you think he's going to maybe refine his game. Is he going to, you know, learn these lessons that he clearly needs to learn if there's a side that's struggling, that's having to dog it out, that's probably going to be going into away games looking not to lose, all that kind of thing? So then my question to you then is, would it maybe suit him from our perspective, given that we can't really control much of that as Wales, that he maybe drops back to the 21s and just maybe gets to be the, you know, the big fish in that smaller pond? Bit more responsibility, but
it depends, you know, if who's fit and available, because I would be inclined to agree if Bale is fit and available. Moore is fit and available. Robson Kanu is fit and available. James Wilson, Brooks are all fit and available. Then, you know, he's kind of seventh in the pecking order then, isn't he, in terms of that front three. So what would be the point of him being in the senior squad? But it's just, you know, when we have people missing, then we're looking to kind of fill out the squad and have a look at people like him, who are sort of on the fringes but still got some learning to do, some improving to do, really, to make a proper impact at full international level.
As things currently stand, I have no more issue with him being in the squad or even in the team than, say, Ben Woodburn or even like a Tom Lawrence, who's got a bit more experience but is equally someone who blows very, very hot and cold. And yeah, Leon's absolutely right. It comes down to, you know, how available are our more consistent performers. But I don't know, with Matondo, he stands out in that sense that when he came on, like, the first thing we saw of Matondo in that game was like, oh, here we go. This is a bit different, because Wilson and Roberts and James really hadn't been making the runs of goal getting forward players, making themselves available for the pass, getting in behind a striker. When he comes on, lovely run and shot, a little bit more direct, and you think, oh, here we go. But then the next three times he gets the ball anywhere, he skies one, or he gets the ball stuck under his feet. That one right at the end that he and Johnny Williams, like this kind of two-on-one effectively, that they conspired to fluff, even though it would have killed the game. And you just think, maybe over time, it's as good for him to be in the senior squad, because he needs to be around better quality players and learn from them, and maybe better decision making and better perception on the pitch comes from learning at a better level.
That's fair. Okay, we've gone this long. You mentioned it very, very briefly in the England game, Leon. So, Johnny Williams, have you enjoyed a Wales goal as much for, you know, quite some time? I mean, obviously the Hungary goals last year from Ramsey was, but you know, but I was really, 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 really enjoyed that goal. I mean, it's a great goal as well. It's a great finish, but the fact that this it's Johnny that gets it, I was absolutely thrilled for him.
Yeah, we all love him, don't we? Well, apart from maybe one or two who are sort of not convinced he has any end product, but that's an assist and a goal against Bulgaria in this Nations League campaign. A very good assist and a very good goal too. And yeah, we're just buzzing for him, because he seems like such a a great guy. But, like, you know, someone was asking Giggs about him in a press conference, saying, oh, he's such a great character, isn't he? And Giggs was just keen to emphasise, but he's, you know, he's a really good player. He's a, you know, he's a quality player, and he can really affect things. He makes things happen. And there's not many players who've got the sort of skill set that he's got of sort of keeping the ball in tight corners and win as many free kicks as he does. And amount of punishment he's taken playing for Wales over the years, he deserves to be a goal scorer for Wales. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant to see.
Yeah, it was, you know, wonderful after so long for him to get that first goal, and in a great context to do it, is it in as well, taking sort of responsibility to drag us to that victory. You know, by the point he comes on, Wilson's gone off, James has gone off. You know, he's the senior player. He's the person we need to find something for us. And he does. And what, that's a hard finish, isn't it? Sort of near post, sort of just right footed, using the pace on the ball from the cross. It was lovely. And like, he celebrated in a way that I imagine we as fans would think we'd imagine we'd celebrate if we scored for Wales. You know, it was beautiful to see.
The number of times you see those shots go skying over or wide, or the defender that's cutting across gets something on it to deflect it. It is nice to pick up an away victory in Eastern Europe, because they don't come along too often for us if you look at our history. So, yeah, even though they are a poor side, absolutely brilliant finish. And I think actually it was a still, the moment, because it happens quite quickly as well, and all the camera angles, you don't get a real feel for the quality of the goal from most of them. But I saw one still image. He's almost, I think, just outside the 6 yard box as well, only by maybe, you know, an inch or two. That's how narrow that angle was. Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Do you see the I think it was the FAW that put it out on Twitter? There was a short clip of the goal going in. I'm guessing it's maybe from their coverage. I'm not too sure, or it's their mic. I'm not quite sure, but actually all you get is, of course, there's no fans in the stadium, you just hear all of the audio from the players themselves. And you can all see them all talking, you know, referring to kind of, or hear them, sorry, talking to, you know, referring to Johnny and things like that. And you could see that, yes, okay, we've scored a goal. They're all happy. It's a late winner, probably. But there did seem to be a huge amount of warmth from within the squad, from within the team. Well, and the squad, yes, because there was some warming up as well towards that goal. And then it cuts back and he goes over to the towards the bench and it's Danny Ward that comes over and makes a fuss. There was a lot of warmth for that goal just from everybody, not just us lot, which was really nice to see as well.
Yeah, obviously a popular guy. And he must have been sort of, I mean, he's been in and around our team and been really important for us in some big games. But he must look at these other lads rocking up. Ben Woodburn, Kiefer Moore, Nico Williams scoring within about 5 minutes of getting into the team. And, you know, when's my turn sort of thing. So it was lovely to see then, and what a well-deserved celebration it was.
His first call up to the senior squad was under Gary Speed, and it was for the Switzerland and Bulgaria doubleheader in 2011. Is it about a month or two, I seem to remember? He then breaks his leg for the on under-21 duty. He's been around the squad for almost a decade, which I think we forget, because he doesn't make his debut then for another couple of years.
It's at Hampden, wasn't it? It's Scotland's.
It was, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Came on for Bale at half-time.
Yeah, if you add to all that, think about the perseverance, given all the injuries and the sort of loan moves and club issues he's had. The perseverance has gone into those 10 years to still be in, to be back in our squad, because he had a little bit of time out of it as well when he was struggling to stay fit and find a club. That's dedication and just wanting to be there, wanting to be part of the setup and wanting career to continue, well rewarded, I thought. And, you know, he's become a really important player for us again.
Yeah, just to mention Giggs, really, because we haven't talked about him. I think it's a good substitution once again. So twice against Bulgaria, he's brought on someone to get the winning goal late. And it was interesting, being he was asked post-match press conference with his staff, Pritchard, asked about late goals. I thought it gave a really good, really astute answer about how it was the work in the first half where they looked kind of in control and they made Bulgaria run that kind of led to those late opening in both games, really. If you make the opposition run, I guess he'd have got this from Ferguson, really, because United did it again and again and again when he was a player. Towards the end of the game, they tire a little bit, start just lagging behind when they're tracking a lot, or they miss a tackle they should make. And that's when you kind of can pick up the rewards of making a team run in the opening part of a game. I thought that was a really good answer. I don't think he used the word tired. That was the thing. He just said, look, you know, they might miss a tackle, might miss a runner. And it was, you're talking about those sort of inches, really, aren't you? Where top level sport, they make such a difference. It counts for so much.
Yeah. One bum note of the evening was Wayne Hennessy's injury, trying to scamper after a poor back pass. And he's put himself out for, well, 3 or 4 months, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's at least, you know, we're going to get to see Davis or Ward, probably Davis, I'd have thought, in some competitive games. It's a shame for Hennessy because, you know, he's heading towards 100 caps. So I'm sure he'll get there. Yeah, let's just see what our second and first or third choice keepers are all about now.
Yeah, I mean, do you read much into Davis going on instead of Ward?
I'd say that, you know, it's probably a reflection of what we talked about quite recently. He's a goalkeeper playing regular football in the Championship, and, you know, we don't have goalkeepers playing regular football. So, to be fair, I don't see why not. You know, I think I honestly couldn't tell you, you know, the level that Danny Ward is currently at, because I haven't seen him play any football since he played for us against Slovakia 4 years ago. But the quicker Hennessy's fit again, the better. But we will at least get to see now in the next triple header, you know, what our other options are and, you know, how reliable they are.
Maxwell, maybe get a call up as third choice.
I don't know. I haven't had a look to see who's if he's been playing this season. Actually, I guess Tom King, Newport, could be another option.
Right. Maxwell's at Blackpool, isn't he?
It's a minor talking point in you know, overall squad terms, but I guess Chris Gunter probably breathes a sigh of relief in the race for a century of caps.
Well, we talked earlier on about what's the point of playing England at the moment, or blah blah blah. I'm starting to wonder, maybe these friendlies are just being arranged to get Chris Gunter up to 100 caps, because That was 97, wasn't it? Against he come on against England. That's 97. There's no doubt in my mind he'll get at least a few minutes against the USA. I don't possibly not in the Nations League games. There's 98. So he's back in with a shout of being the first one there now.
Yeah, that looked doubtful for a while.
I did.
Yeah, I just called up Tom King's wiki and nobody's even bothering to update his page. He doesn't even mention the fact that his career stats at Newport. But interestingly, he played, it looks like he played under-17s for England once, way back in the midst of times. Qualifies via his mother from Cardiff, but he's also eligible for Gibraltar through residency, so could be a tug of war.
Well, Maxwell's playing regular for Blackpool, so I suppose he's got to be in with a shout as well. He seems to be their first choice keeper at the minute.
Yeah,
It's not
I have to see.
a long list of elite level options, is it?
But any other talking points for that game, or indeed any of them, as a reflection of the three? Think about a triple header, because we've got another one now with this USA fixture. So games are coming thick and fast after months of not having any, which we've covered previously. But it does put some pressure on the squad, and I can imagine club managers probably hate them. But it'll be the same similar pattern now next month with respect to America, Ireland, Finland, I think is the order, isn't
I'm
it?
calling it now in that USA game, at least with the friendly this time, partly because it was England. There was an extent to which we wanted to at least cobble together something that looked like as close to a first team as we could manage. I don't think there'll be any pretense to try and play anything like a first team against the USA. I'm not entirely sure what the point of it is because we'll be further into the season. Players will have played even more football. Like you say, club managers must be wondering why all of a sudden, given everything that's been going on, we're having three games in a week now at international level. And normally I'm not sympathetic to clubs moaning about players playing for their country because we're obviously international football fans on this podcast. But there we are. So I think Gunter will get his 98th, but I'd be amazed if we see anything that really teaches us anything about where our team's at against the USA. And then players will come back in for the double header because we'll be in a real competition actually for promotion in the Nations League. People will have their opinions to how serious a tournament this is, but we want to be in League A, don't we? And I think the USA friendly is unlikely to be much more than a sideshow from there.
Well, it'll be their first game this year since, well, they only their second international this year and their first one since February the 1st. They beat Costa Rica in a friendly. So it'll almost be a year since a competitive game. So they might be a little bit rusty as well, which might be something to look
So
forward to, I
second time
suppose.
ever we've played them. What do you remember about the last time we played them?
Well, I remember Matthew Jones had an absolute shocker at right back. Gave away a penalty, red card, and we probably put out barely even a C team because I think we had about 19, 18 or 19 dropouts. It was end of season, it was May, long trip as well.
San Jose,
Yeah,
was
so
it?
it's not even,
California,
East
I
Coast
think.
America, all the way over West Coast. And we had players like Rhys Day and Matthew Rhys in the squad. David Pipe won his only cap.
Stephen
Steve Roberts, I think,
Roberts.
might have gone. Yeah, it was pretty. It was pretty weak. From what I remember of the game, I think we were lucky to get nil, and they probably deserved more than two. But I'm not remembering a huge amount of the detail. Only the assorted late call-ups and ringers. A bit like Fireside side on a recent
It was
Thursday
a real
with lockdowns and things.
scratch team. Looking at it now, Simon Davis and Jason Kumas are the only sort of, and Mark Penridge is in there as well as the sort of the quality players that stand out. Gareth Taylor played up front, my namesake. Always like to see him in the team. Oster was in there, Andy Johnson was in there. But yeah, I was going to say, if you didn't record it already, David Pipe's one and only cap. Bit of trivia for the nerds is a good one.
Yeah, it's remarkable all the away friendlies that Kumas did go to. He went
Yeah.
all that way over to California. Yeah, so yeah, only the second time we've played them. But playing CONCACAF nations is becoming a little bit of a thing now. But we've played Trinidad, we've played Panama, now the USA.
It seems a strange. I thought we were playing in Swansea because I mean there won't be any fans there, so why not just play all the games in Cardiff. It doesn't.
Well, again, there was another brilliant tweet from Mirko Balesan earlier saying we've just made it a slightly shorter trip for them. moving it a few miles west. I have no idea. I have no idea. I don't know. Is it because I'm putting this out there? I don't know. Is it because the women have already got a game at Cardiff, or I don't know, the 21s or something? I don't know.
Yeah, it just seems a strange one to take it to a different venue when no fans are going to be there anyway. I mean, I'm all for more games being played in Swansea. I'm all for more games being played in Wrexham. Obviously, I've been banging a drum on that one for a while. But well, as no fans be allowed in, then why not just play the games where it's...
The only thing I wanted to raise with you was, we've mentioned him obviously in the context of Wales and touched on him with Spurs, but Joe Roden's transfer... It seemed impending for a number of weeks, and I can understand why the Swans are a bit disappointed with the fee. I think it's 11 million rising to 15, maybe. But yeah, I quite like the sound of that.
Yeah, I think that's not a bad club at all to go to for him, is it? I think we don't ideally want him not playing football over the next year, because he like some of the other young players has become really important for us now. But equally, it's a top club, and I think we aspire for Joe Roden to be a first team regular at a top club. And it's a club who, you know, some of their defensive options are not all that. Aging Alderweireld or Eric Dyer moving back out of his normal position, or Davison Sanchez, who's got a mistake in them. You think if Roden kicks on and keeps improving, work his way into just a few games this season, I think that could prove to be a really good move.
The Europa League, it's a lot of games. And Mourinho will want to win that. His record in the Europa League is played two seasons and won it every time. So I think that'll be a competition that'll be taken seriously. I don't think he can play in the Europa League. He said that, but that sort of then gives him space to maybe play in the cup competitions at home. And I think, you know, Spurs, it's been a while since they won a trophy. They'll be pretty desperate to do that. And I look at the Spurs squad now and I think, well, it's kind of, you know, with, you know, some of the issues that Manchester City and Liverpool have had already this season, they've kind of has got as good a squad as anyone, really, in the Premier League. And I've sort of expect them to be, well, not sort of, I expect them to be challenging for the title, really. I'll be surprised if they aren't. I think he'll do well. I hope he does. And it's been ages since we've had like a centre-back at a top club in terms of like challenging for the title, challenging for trophies. And the last one I can really think of was Kevin Ratcliffe at Everton. It was like 30 years ago now. That's incredible, really, considering how many, you know, top, you know, midfielders and wingers and strikers we've had, you know, at sort of trophy-winning clubs. In that time, and it's just been so long since we've had, you know, a top Welsh centre back playing for a sort of elite level club, as it were.
You're not counting Reece Weston coming through at Arsenal, then, no?
No, I'm not counting that one. And I'm not counting who else. No. It was like, there's one or two, oh, I don't know, like David Hughes at Aston Villa or something, but maybe got one.
We had Danny Collins for a while, what's your problem?
Yeah, there was Steve Evans competing for the Welsh Premier League title. That was one reply which I quite...
He played. I think I said challenging for the title and playing in Europe. Someone said, Steve Evans. So, because, you know, of course, like, Ashley Williams did have one season in Europe, but, you know, Swansea were never challenging for the title, you know. It's brilliant. As Ashley Williams and Daddy Gabaldon were, they were never at a club who were challenging for the title.
Fair point.
So that was the point I was making.
I can remember when Gabaldon went to, obviously him and Collins went to West Ham, I can remember thinking, you know, Gabaldon could use that as a stepping stone. I mean, I remember at the time thinking that's kind of probably Collins' limit. That was my kind of gut feeling. I mean, they were still young. I mean, Collins was a bit younger again. But obviously injuries did for Gabaldon, and he was never able really to kick on. I mean, they loved him there at West Ham, but I think he had the ability, but it didn't quite sort of pan out for him. But yeah, no, I think other than Steve Evans caveat, I think, or notwithstanding it, I think you're probably right, actually. It will be interesting to see how many games he gets. And given what Mourinho how he sets his teams up and how important defensive shape and defensive resilience is to him, you get the impression that he doesn't just go and buy any centre-back. I mean, I haven't forensically looked at his transfer purchases, but then, you know, to what extent is he in charge of the personnel side of things and the recruitment side of things at clubs? I mean, at Manchester United, not necessarily, and so on. So, you know, I'd be interested to see, you know, what to what extent he's a Mourinho signing, and I've no reason to think he isn't. I tell you what as well struck me as well, it was one of the team photos for one of these games. Roden is basically as tall as Moore and Hennessy. Maybe there's an inch in it, and I hadn't quite realised he's a big strapping lad, and I knew he was
really
tall.
That's surprising.
He's either got long studs or he's standing on it. If you look at a couple of the team pictures, he's there or thereabouts. He's not as tall, but he's not far off, because there's one of them where he's in, I think it's the three of them pretty much all in a row, or they're three or four in a row. And I was surprised at quite how tall Roden is.
Six or four, according to Wiki, actually, yeah. It's just decent height, isn't it?
Worth mentioning as well, there are little moves around that sort of Football League deadline that hopefully will prove to be quite positive. You know, Smith's gone on loan again, it's time to Doncaster, Woodburn's gone to Blackpool. Joe Morel's moved permanently now to Luton Town. And that's the one that's kind of most interesting and maybe positive. Luton's started the season quite well. They got four wins from seven, but they've got a sort of little Welsh club there now, haven't they, between Morel and Lockyer and Norrington Davis. And, you know, it's good to see that their fortunes maybe can quite positive as they've got some of our lads playing the team.
And with Nathan Jones as manager, of course.
Yes, of course.
Who's rehabilitating his career, his reputation after, you know, really, let's be honest, a really difficult time at Stoke. So that's nice for him, because I think he did look like he was going places, and that you know, that seemed an obvious move to make for all parties when he went to Stoke. But I think by his own admission, he's had to win a few people over at the club and among the fans as well. I read an interview when he went back to Luton. So very, very humble, very honest individual, like the look of Nathan Jones. So yeah, it's good to see. Even Kerris Matthews mentioned it on Six Music, I noticed this morning. Because somebody phoned, I think somebody from Luton had texted in or something, had made the reference to a lazy Sunday morning, clocks going back, celebrating, I think, the win over Sheffield Wednesday, I think, yesterday. And even Kerris was aware of the little enclave, or is it an exclave, one or the other.
He has been a Luton Town fan. I think they're pretty sure they're season ticket holders. So she has been following the fortunes of Luton Town for a while, yeah.
And it's refreshing to see that, you know, in that sort of nerdy way one does. I went through this, who are in the starting lineups in all these random Football League games, and they were all starting, you know, Levitt and Williams and Gunter at Charlton, Woodburn for Blackpool, Smith for Doncaster, Morel and Lockyer and Norrington Davis at Luton. So hopefully, you know, a season ahead where these players, you know, get games, they kick on, they make themselves, you know, really viable options for our Euro squad, you know, because in the past, some of the loan moves we've looked at players going on haven't really worked out for them. So fingers crossed for all of these guys.
Yeah. Talking of which, what about Harry Wilson to Cardiff? That seems a good move on paper, and it seems to sort of tick some boxes, that one. Hope it goes well for him.
I didn't want to be the one to bring Harry Wilson up, because I'm so excited about Harry Wilson coming to Cardiff. I don't know what to tell you. He's really, I think, a Premier League player, isn't he? You know, he did all right at Bournemouth last year. And I think, had it not been issues over money, I think Liverpool were looking to offload him permanently, you know, and had they got the bid they wanted from Burnley or from Celtic, I think he would have gone. But that deadline came and went. And, you know, once it came to a loan to the Championship or not playing much football this season, I'm glad it's Cardiff who's got him. And, you know, I watched the Bournemouth game in the week, and you know, we weren't brilliant, but it's a decent result. And just the quality of his delivery and the consistency of the quality of his delivery, you know, Cardiff obviously rely on set pieces and you know, looking for Kiefer Moore, you know, a fair old bit, and it's going to make a big difference for us, I think. But hopefully for Wales as well, if he can have a season like he had at Derby, say, in the Championship, then he'd be really flying going into the new year and going into the Euros.
I think I'd want a bit more out of him than that Derby game. I think now is the time for him to really stamp his authority on that division, on that team. He's probably, in some respects, playing for a contract somewhere in the Premier League then. So if he wants that, or at the very least top-end Championship, then he's got to dare I say it, dominate that division now. And I think Cardiff are still finding their feet a little bit under Harris, and they did need a bit of creative edge, didn't they?
Absolutely.
But you know, I think back to when, you know, Kumar had that first loan spell at Cardiff, and he was just in charge, and he just dominated that division that year. And I'm wanting something towards that. I mean, it's a big ask to, you know, to emulate Kumas that season. He was just incredible. But I think that's what I want to see off Wilson. If he is as good as well, his wage demands appear to think he is, and what fans have invested in him, then I think he needs to be dominating that division.
Yeah,
he's not, you know, 100% solely responsible for whether he can do that. It's about shape, and it's about, you know, how Harris picks the team and all the rest of that. And you know, they haven't started particularly well, but that's what I'm wanting. That's what I'm wanting to see.
But it's no coincidence that the best of Cardiff that we saw when they were doing better towards the end of last season came when Tomlin was in the team, when we had that little bit more of a creative force in that midfield three, and he can't be relied on to be fit and starting games. You know, increasingly that seems to be the case. So if someone like that we needed coming in, you know, desperately, and for it to be someone as good as Harry Wilson is or should be, really exciting. But yeah, I take absolutely what you're saying. He's now got to go and prove that, and he should be someone who can dominate that division, because I would say, you know, perhaps a bit of wealth in there, he's too good for that level. You know, he's a Premier League player, and I thought he was a, you know, Bournemouth had a bad season last year, but he, you know, he did all right for them, and you know, at the very least, I think that's the level he should be at. But he's where he is now for this season, and you know, if you're a Cardiff fan, that's, you know, that's a bit of a bonus, and you know, hopefully it'll be good for him. You know, he's going to be in the team. He's going to have a chance to be scoring goals and setting up goals on a regular basis. Hopefully.
Yeah. Also, I think you know, dropping down a division, it could be good for him ahead of the Euros, in that he'll be a team that should win more games than they lose. If he'd gone to Burnley, I don't think that would have been the case. I think they'll be in a relegation fight this season. And ahead of the Euros, if you're a sort of creative player like Harry Wilson, do you really want to, you know, go into a major championship having just sort of struggled with a struggling team like that? Whereas if he does well with Cardiff, I expect Cardiff to be there or thereabouts. I'd be sort of disappointed if they weren't in the playoffs, actually. He'll be going to the European Championships off the back of that and more confident.
And the noises that came out of the top brass in the club as well in the last week suggest that they'll be fully expecting them to be challenging as well. So, yeah, a bit of pressure there as well. So, which I think, you know, if he can, you know, he turns 24 this season, Wilson. So this, to me, like I said, I think this is the season that probably dictates largely whether he's going to become a championship player with the odd season in the top flight, or he's able to step up and prove that he's a consistent Premiership player. We'll see. Anything else to cover?
Good luck to James Collins on his retirement from Football Day. I know it's been coming up. He's not played at all in the last season or so, but I think he's called it a day once and for all. So good luck on whatever he goes on to in the future.
One of those players that tends to divide opinion, but I always had a bit of time for him.
Yeah.
And you'd have wanted him in the trenches alongside you more than most players, I think, was my sort of general sort of view on it. I knew his strengths as a player, which I've, you know, had a bit of time for as well. So, yeah, no, I agree with that. I was surprised when he came out to say he was retired, because I thought he already had. But, yeah. I think his statement sort of alluded to that as well, to be fair to him. So I don't know whether there's some statement they have to make in order to get some insurance payout or something, or pension advance, I don't know. But anyway, yeah, no, best of luck to him.
Yeah, he's a very Wales career, 51 caps, 3 goals, played his part in us qualifying, and played at the European Championships as well, played in the European Championship semi-final, something that I could list a whole bunch of England players never played in the Championship semi-final, but that's a bit churlish, so I won't. He's a good player, and he seems a sound guy, actually. And it felt like, you know, his international career was sort of going to fizzle out really disappointingly. So I'm sort of glad him and Chris Coleman were able to iron out differences, and he came back into the squad and played his part in the sort of greatest period we've ever had, really. And best of luck to him.
and was responsible for a really good quote. And I forget the exact wording of it, but in relation to that semi-final, I think it might be on the Ellis James podcast, he was sort of recounting Ronaldo's goal. And he said, you know, I basically on the lines of, I knew where he was. I thought, okay, I'm going to get this. I'm going to go. And then all of a sudden, he's got a stepladder out. and it's in the back of the net. And I just thought, yeah, it was there was a certain sort of self-deprecation to it. He was, you know, Ronaldo is his man. But when he
Ronaldo
played greatness,
was with James Chester, wasn't he? But it went over Colin's head.
Was it? There you go. You're remembering it better than me. But it did sort of sum him up. He seemed to... You know, he seemed to play with there was a cheekiness to him as well, but a hard edge. And yeah, don't forget, of course, he came through at Cardiff. And I remember watching a couple of his early games. He came through as a striker as well. I mean, he scored goals as a striker for Cardiff, albeit at League One or League Two, would it have been. But yeah, best luck, Ginge.
There's a terrific image on the BBC website story of him announcing his retirement. Starts with him as he is now. And then you scroll down to an image of him playing as a young man for Cardiff, and it was a real, real funny one to look at all these years later.
We'll get there.
We do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, gents, I'm still doing that thing today. The clocks went back, but I'm still. This is what time it actually is. So it feels a bit later, and I'm sure it is for you, Leon. You came up with an idea just before we started, guys, for the next one. So rather than do a look ahead, well, which we will do, but before that, we might do something a little bit different, inspired by the tweet we put out as well about things you might change if you could travel back in time, if you had a TARDIS and could travel back in time.
Just, I think you put on pitch, didn't you? So like an on pitch.
Yeah.
But I just kept thinking of like all the terrible decisions that the FAW made over the years. Sort of went a bit off track with your original idea.
I kind of pitched it as a room 101 for episode 101, but it'll now have to be for episode 102 or 103.
Yeah.
But all ideas and suggestions welcome.
Give that tweet another run around the block as well, and we'll try and put something together for that. No end of talking points, but I kind of framed it by sort of saying, not the obvious. Obviously, there's there's Joe Jordan and there's Bowden's penalty. Sort of like the next level down, but obviously we can bring those in as well. So yeah,
no one is allowed to attempt but John Toshack into room 101. We've done that to death. Those arguments we have. It's going to be much funnier and lighter than that, I'm sure.
Bobby Gould's not even allowed in the building, let alone into the room.
No.
Okay, gents, been a pleasure. Look after yourselves, enjoy lockdown, and we'll get together in a week or two. It's